Manufacturer Podcast. Today, SMU Preview and the start of a new series, People and Skills. We've got two excellent interviews today with Hilary Levers from Engineering UK and Russell Smith from Hunter Selection. There's all that and plenty more in today's episode. Friday, the 11th of April. Hello, listener. And it actually is Friday, but we're recording today.
Friday the 12th.
Yeah, thank you, James. Friday the 12th of April. And I have been coerced, nay, bullied into recording this podcast episode bright and early. I'm joined by Joe Bush and James Devonshire. Hello, boys. I'm recording early because basically James just wants to enjoy his Friday, right?
Yeah, it's 2 o'clock. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon here on Friday.
Yeah. And when do you start drinking normally? Like an hour ago.
Yeah, I was going to say about 11 a.m., but I've held off today. I do appreciate your agile, flexible.
You've got to have your Friday. Joe's not even working today.
That's how dedicated I am. I'm up at 7 o'clock in the morning on a day that I'm not even working just to do the podcast. That is how much the Manufacturer Podcast means to me. We're missing Molly. She's on the hen do, so she's going to be up to her eyeballs in tequila by now.
At 7 in the morning, yeah. I mean,
why not?
Is she going abroad? Is she going abroad for the hen do? Or
no. I think she's going to Suffolk.
Ooh,
like a manor house / stately home kind of thing in Suffolk. So I think they'll be pampering and booze and things like that.
I was just about to say, it's like when you go abroad and you're flying at like 5 a.m. from Gatwick, it's always fine to have a beer.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's not frowned upon or expected.
Yeah. Time zones are obsolete in airports. It's just the rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, by the way, for people of Suffolk. I just realised that I winced when Joe mentioned Suffolk. That was. I do apologise for my prejudice against Suffolk. I feel like Molly's not been working here long enough to be bantered for missing an episode. But it will happen soon.
She'll be back next week.
Oh, yeah.
She will be back next week, I would imagine. Listener, that's a very dashing hat you're wearing, Joe.
This is my just got out of bed, can't be bothered to do my hair hat.
You do your hair, do you?
Yeah. Not really, but I mean, I kind of tidy it up when I sort of start work just in case I'm on a call, but I couldn't be bothered at 6:30 this morning, really. You're just lucky I'm wearing clothes, Tom.
I'm thinking this. I was talking to Katie about this yesterday. You know, you've got people now work from home. It's you know, it's a very common thing, and I see people. I don't really pay any mind normally to people and kind of what they're wearing on calls, but you see some people are, you know, wearing shirts and stuff. Some people are even being like branded clothing for their company, like branded polos and stuff. I've been on like client calls this week, and I've kind of looked at myself on Zoom or on Teams even, and thought, oh man, I look like a hobo. People don't care, do they? I don't think people care anymore. Or do they?
I'm wearing a vest.
James always wears a tank top.
Except for when I have a client call, external facing call, I always wear a t-shirt. But always shorts. Yeah. Always. I always wear shorts.
Oh, I don't wear anything on the bottom. But yeah, on the top.
What if your webcam suddenly fell down?
Oh, well, then I'm sacked. You know, I'm up for a disciplinary and then most likely sacked. I don't think people really care, though. So.
Nah. No, I think since COVID, I think... The whole video call thing has meant that people are really not that fussed about what people are wearing, to be quite honest.
I would agree. So look, let's get into the start of this People and Skills series. Always a fun series, right? Because we've always got loads of content to draw on. Skills, such an often discussed topic within the sector. We need them. We need them now. We've spoken at length about why it's hard to find them. And a business, no matter how technologically mature, profitable, or innovative, will never not be reliant on the people they employ. People are, of course, the lifeblood of any organization. At this year's Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week, the theme of People and Skills will be prominent. We hope to give you a taster of the sort of conversations that you can expect to hear on the 5th to the 6th of June. The interviews we've got for you today touch on some of this stuff: skills, recruitment, mindsets, solutions. Dr. Hilary Levers likes to talk about this stuff. You may have heard her before. She's the CEO of Engineering UK, and here she is on the Manufacturer Podcast.
We're working to enable more young people from all backgrounds to be inspired, informed, and progress into engineering and technology. So we do that through research and advocacy to improve STEM education policy, by reaching out to young people themselves, and by working with over 300 other organisations who have the same interests.
We hear manufacturers say to us constantly that they struggle to attract and to retain skills. You've probably answered this question many times in interviews, but why do you think this industry has such a chronic skills problem?
Yeah, it's still a good question. I think one of the reasons is we have outdated misconceptions culturally about what engineering is and what it looks like to work in engineering and technology and who works in those areas. And disrupting kind of a cultural norm is very hard. One of the ways you can do that is through education, but engineering doesn't have a strong presence in the curriculum. And when it does, it's often not called engineering, actually. So we have design and technology, which has got a lot of engineering in it. And then you're taught science. And actually, geography has quite a bit relating to climate change as well, which is why we think there's a lot of opportunity to link to engineering, but those links aren't really made. So it means that the way in which we can displace misconceptions and expand people's understanding of what engineering and technology entails has to be added in. And so to come through the careers information system and the all the extracurricular and engagement and outreach stuff going on, and that just isn't that systematic, and it isn't necessarily set up to address workforce needs. The careers information system is about helping people make their best next step, but we also need to get the education and career system working to meet workforce needs.
One thing I always say, from the perspective of someone that came into the industry having no sort of prior knowledge of it, was once I got into factories and met manufacturers and engineers, that's when the kind of light bulb moment came for me, like, wow, like what an incredible industry this is. But what are kind of some of the blockers that you've found to that solution? Like, for instance, I don't think engineers and manufacturers are particularly good at marketing themselves. And then how easy is it in practice to actually get school kids into factories? You know, the environment of a factory floor is quite, you've got to have your wits about you, and to kind of manage school kids in that sort of setting. I mean, how kind of easy is that?
The amount of competition that is there for anyone who is kind of STEM interested and has taken STEM subjects in school and colleges, you can't just be trying to recruit them into your organization at that point. That's an important part of meeting your workforce needs, but you will need to invest much earlier to grow the talent pool from which everyone can recruit from. And that's a lot about how Engineering UK works. We bring together organizations. It's a great collective effort and a greater good effort. So that hopefully when people then go to recruit, there's a natural feeling of meeting their needs rather than having to come up with, you know, snazzy marketing campaigns, as it were. I'm sure there's still scope to improve the marketing and the messaging. And we know the messages that, you know, we're getting really good insight into the messages that young people are receptive to. The social value and purpose and problem solving and creativity are all very appealing and, you know, core parts of careers in this area, but ones that maybe haven't been expressed as much. There's a lot of focus on products rather than the people who are creating those products and the skills that they bring. And that social value piece is important. We know that young people who make the connection between engineering and environmental sustainability are 7 times more likely to say they're interested in a career in engineering. So that's a really important narrative to be sharing. And then in terms of opening up to schools, So some organisations are able to do that, and you don't necessarily need to get people around all of the very dangerous aspects of a factory floor, as it were. They can look in, but a lot of organisations have made really good adaptions and understood how they can bring particularly 17, 16-year-olds in for work experience or the industrial placements associated with T-levels. And it takes effort and commitment, but it is well worth it. But you could also work with schools in other ways. You can go to them. You can have relatable role models, telling them about why they were interested in their roles and what they do, and really trying to connect on a human level, we think is really helpful. And also giving them opportunities to get hands-on with things. Those opportunities have to glide in schools and are really engaging. And there's lots of work that we do to try and get those opportunities into schools as well.
We've seen some fantastic examples of diverse and inclusive businesses within the industry. And actually, when you talk about factories making adaptations, EvTech Automotive is one that we visited recently and will feature in this series of our People and Skills podcast. Absolutely incredible company. Just over 40% of their workforce are female, and just over 40% have some form of disability. It's an incredible place. But the fact is, you know, engineering is still dominated by white, able-bodied males. How do you think we change this?
So I would frame it positively. We are seeing the workforce becoming increasingly diverse. And I think that is really important. I worry about overly telling, particularly young women, because they are the most underrepresented group, kind of proportionately, that we need more women in the workforce. There aren't enough women. Oh my gosh, there are only 16.5% women in our workforce. It suggests that there's a problem, and that you're being recruited to fix a problem almost. Whereas taking a more inclusive perspective, we really want you. We know the skills that you can bring. And the organizations like the one you gave as an example, the ones that we see who make a really powerful commitment to improve the diversity of their workforce are able to do so. It's not straightforward and it's not trivial. So it really entails building relationships with people from a young age, getting out there into schools, getting easing those pathways for people all the way through, and looking at different ways of recruiting. Obviously, you know, eliminating any bias you may have in your recruitment systems, but just being a little bit more open in what those entry requirements might look like, what the assessment processes might be, really thinking creatively. And people have got to believe in the value of doing that. And then when they do, you create this virtuous circle where people can see that they are really wanted. It can be done. And it is very exciting when it is done.
You're framing all of this very, very positively, Hilary, which is great. And I know, you know, Engineering UK is very much kind of based on evidence and analysis, and you continue to do that. I do sometimes fear that we don't frame it particularly, just because it's such a huge problem. It can kind of come across negatively with the people we talk to. And it is, because it is such a massive issue and a strain for organizations at the moment. But my question would be, how hopeful are you for the future? How hopeful are you that the industry can eventually overcome some of these problems that we're talking about?
I am. I'm inherently quite an optimistic person, so I am hopeful. But I think we have good grounds to be hopeful. We are learning more about how we can make the industry more attractive to young people. And the industry itself is being much more thoughtful about how to do that. So, you know, if you think about what people used to do in schools 10 years ago, they would probably reach out to a school who they had regular contact with. It was easy. We know they're interested. The same school might be having a very similar talk around what attracted the person giving the talk into engineering, which might be 40 years out of date compared to what people are feeling now. So that, you know, the updated approach we have to attraction, I think, is really helpful. But we do need, there are some bits that we really need to step up and scale up. And we do need industry to play its part, not just in thinking about diversity and more flexible recruitment approaches, but actually investing in young people in very active ways, like work experience opportunities, like the T-level industrial placements. So the T-levels are the new technical pathway, which should be the main technical pathway for 16 to 18-year-olds. You take a T-level in a particular area, like design or digital or engineering or construction, and it is, that's all you will take. So it's the equivalent of 3 A-levels, and it is an entry into apprenticeships or straight into employment, and we see quite a lot of that happening. Or they can also go back into kind of the university system. And every student taking a T-level needs a 9-week industrial placement. So it's a big ask from industry, really concrete. And it takes a bit of effort to work out what that would look like, find your local provider, make that offer. But the give back and the investment you will make in your future skills pipeline is really significant. So there are, you know, it isn't a passive thing. Actually, we need organisations like Engineering UK. We need industry to stand up, take its part with those industry placements and with opening up apprenticeships. And there are some needs there around supporting young people who might be at the lower entry level for apprenticeships, level 2, 3, 4, 16, 17, 18 year olds. They may need more financial support to enable them to travel to the apprenticeships, whether that's actually quite a significant barrier for young people, or thinking about the language you use about the apprenticeship itself to make sure it's attractive.
Of course, we have a show coming up in June, Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week, and you're going to be there, I believe, Hilary. So what sort of conversations are you hoping to have with people over those 2 days?
Yeah, I really love getting out there and seeing what's going on in the sector, reaping some brilliant examples of just things which are really exciting and innovating to bring our stories to life when we talk with young people and building our bank of careers role models. So I will be out there seeking, but also listening to the challenges that people are experiencing around the workforce, if there's anything that we're not understanding and haven't responded to. It's really, really helpful to hear that. And then if there are organisations, you know, you gave a great example of one that's really doing well around inclusion and recruitment, just learning from them about their best practice. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, look forward to seeing you there, Hilary. And in the meantime, I'm sure you will, but keep up the good work.
We'll do our best. Thank you.
Hello listener, just a quick one. Are you coming to the Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week in Birmingham this year? Because you should be. Not least because we've got our Manufacturing Digitalisation Summit, which is in its fourth year now. It's running on the 5th and 6th of June, and it will focus on the application of digital technologies that are enhancing the processes, efficiencies and outcomes of the manufacturing industry.
You get quite a broad range of manufacturing sectors, and some are ahead of the curve and some are just starting.
It's just fantastic to see everybody together, really working together and sharing ideas and knowledge, and that's how we're genuinely going to transform the industry.
Across the same 2 days and back for its seventh year, we've got our Industrial Data and AI Summit. This is specifically for analysts, scientists and other data professionals. This summit drills down beyond digital transformation and dashboards to topics of greater intellectual challenge, depth and focus.
Take off the sort of the technical language and all of the legalese that might associate with this and say, how are you dealing with this in your own business?
It's quite nice to know you're not alone, that you're not the only person having that challenge or coming up against that barrier or that obstacle.
Both summits will run in our usual roundtable discussion sessions format, which allows you to share pain points, experiences and even explore solutions with one another. So get yourself to the NEC in Birmingham on the 5th and 6th of June. Book your place by visiting themanufacturer.com/events. That's themanufacturer.com/events.
So some headlines now on the website. Headlines that you can check out on the People and Skills section. The Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, the SMMT, has been recognised as one of Britain's best places to work after gaining gold accreditation from Investors in People, the international benchmark for workplace standards and people management. The gold accolade, which is achieved by just 17% of organisations seeking IIP accreditation, was awarded to SMMT Group, including SMMT, Industry Forum and the Motor Ombudsman, for its advanced levels of organisational leadership with an emphasis on transparency, recognition, well-being and empowerment, all the good stuff to encourage innovation and collaborative working. SMMT was recognised for its progressive people-focused policies, including all-staff engagement in decision-making, investment in career development, creating a culture that recognises high performance. Well done to you guys. Elsewhere, Aston University Engineering Academy has been presented with the first set of Leopard Jewel toolboxes sponsored by De Beers to encourage young talent into the jewellery industry. The Leopards initiative was founded in 2016 to preserve the skills and craftsmanship of the British jewellery industry and mentor young people into the industry who are critical to its future. The boxes, which contain equipment and tools necessary to create a piece of jewellery, were hand-delivered on Thursday the 21st of March by three of the founding members of the Leopards, jewellery designers Theo Fennell and Stephen Webster, and leading authority on jewellery and gemstones, Carol Wooten. Also, we do have to mention Top 100. In response to the rising concerns from manufacturers over the lack of young people coming into the sector, an aging workforce and the dearth of visible role models, the manufacturer launched its Top 100 program back in 2013. You may have heard of it, listener. Its aim was to provide a platform and a showcase to celebrate the best of UK manufacturing, not the big businesses and household company names necessarily, but the inspiring people who make this amazing industry tick. And this time last Friday, was it, Joe?
In-person judging day last Friday, which is the final stage in of the judging process before the final list of the top 100 is sort of rubber stamped. So it's always a big day in the top 100 calendar. Michael Page Recruitment very kindly hosted us at their very, very plush offices just off of the Strand, which was also very handy for the Coal Hole pub as well on the Strand, which I've frequented many times.
Lovely.
Yeah, we had representatives from obviously Michael Page, from academia, from manufacturers, from industry organisations, both virtually and in person, because there were train strikes on the day. Great afternoon, chewing the fat over the candidates for the final list. Lots of insight, lots of ideas and opinions flying around the room. It was great day. So thank you to everyone involved.
We've been asleep and you've been busy finding stories while we've been asleep, James.
Yeah, no, actually this story has been on the website for a few days, but it's linked to Smart Manufacturing Engineering Week again, and that is that the Ingenuity Skills Awards 2024 shortlist has been announced. So Ingenuity, the charity dedicated to closing skills gaps in engineering and manufacturing, has announced the shortlist for this year's Ingenuity Skills Awards. This year marks the 10th anniversary of this annual celebration of the brightest and best in UK engineering and manufacturing talent and the organisation's championing skills development to ensure a bright future for the sector, which is, as we all know, the backbone of the UK economy. This year's ceremony will be hosted by the Honorary Fellow of the Royal Academy of Engineering and award-winning broadcaster Steph McGovern at the Hilton Birmingham Metropole next to the NEC during Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week on June 5. And there's a very informative article on our website under the People and Skills channel, and it's got all of the finalists, and you can click each one to expand, and it's pretty informative, and it's got everyone listed there, so I do urge you to check it out. Something I'm looking forward to during Smart Manufacturing Engineering Week for sure.
Yep, plenty to get your teeth sunk into there, listener, so get yourself on the website. Now time to hear from Russell Smith at Hunter Selection. Russell had a chat with me about recruitment in the sector. So let's have a listen to him now.
I'm Russell Smith. I'm the Managing Director of Hunter Selection. We're an independent recruitment consultancy focused on engineering, manufacturing, service and technology recruitment. Our roots are in manufacturing. That's where we established ourselves coming up to 20 years ago out of Bristol. And we've now got regional offices in Cardiff and in the Midlands too.
I'll start by asking, what are some of the trends that you're seeing when it comes to recruitment in the sector?
It's an exciting and interesting sector at the moment. I think often it's, you know, it still gets derided, doesn't it? Manufacturing, and, you know, we've got this dark satanic mills kind of thing hanging over us. And yet that's just so different from what we're seeing these days. So clearly there are some really, you know, traditional heavier industrial elements, lots of food and drink production and innovation going on in and around food and drink and packaging particularly. And then so many exciting sectors revolving around more scientific technological advancements, a lot of effort going into sustainability, a lot of effort going into new ways of working.
When you're kind of, you know, seeing jobs being advertised from manufacturing organizations, are they making themselves sound attractive enough? Are they marketing themselves well enough, do you think?
No, I think often not. We're finding a lot of the work that we're doing now with our customer base, with our client base, is about making the good story that they've got to tell more accessible to candidates. Mm-hmm. So quite often, you know, a scenario we would often run into is where the employer says, you know, something along the lines of, oh, you know, the applicant didn't really know much about our organization. And, you know, and then we sort of say, well, OK, where is this information? You know, well, it's on page 37 of the website. You know, it tells you all about our history. And we're working a lot with a number of clients at the moment to prepare kind of recruitment packs, really, so that when the applicant meets the potential employer for the first time, they're as well informed as possible about not only the job description and the historical stuff, but more about the culture and the story that that company wants to tell about themselves as well. And the need to actually make that information readily available, you know, rather than, you know, say page 37 of the website. Well, that's just not good enough these days in terms of selling yourself as an organization.
I mean, I personally think it's quite hard to do that as a manufacturing organization. I mean, this is from somebody that came into the industry cold and didn't really know a great deal about it, but it didn't really click for me until I was in factories and seeing what's being manufactured. And I guess that's a little bit harder to do in a job application, although I suppose they are writing for people that know, you know, presumably know a bit about what goes on inside a factory.
Yeah, but it's all the soft stuff that makes a difference, isn't it? And, you know, knowing what the product is, knowing who they sell it to, knowing a bit about the processes involved in the manufacturing. Well, you know, most people in industry would understand that. But the things that make the difference are the culture of the organization, the ambition of the organization, how they treat their staff. And I'm afraid you've just got to be more out there telling your own story about that. You know, you can't hide your light under a bushel. It's just too competitive a marketplace for talent, the word that I struggle to say still, even now. I have a bit of an issue with that one. But it is still, you know, it's a place where you're going to have to go and compete for the best people to work for you. I was at a seminar the other day, and you know, the person presented there said, you know, don't be deluded anymore. You're not going to an interview. You know, it's a different process. The applicant is interviewing you as an employer. You know, it's the other way around. Who are you? What are you all about? Tell me about you. You know, this is the nature of recruitment interviews these days. It's not the one way process of, are you good enough to work for my organization? It's, you know, it's more about, am I the organization that sits well with you, that fits you and your, you know, your values and your aspirations? And perhaps manufacturing has been a bit slow to move that way. But I see, you know, much more encouraging signs of that in the last couple of years, and maybe as recently as the last 6 months.
Well, that's really good to hear. Look, we've come across some absolutely fantastic apprentices, young engineers, you know, people in the sector. I know that kind of, you know, mechanism of attracting them kind of needs a bit of tweaking. But, you know, would you agree with that sort of standalone statement that the talent is out there, or if we don't like talent, the people are out there?
Don't you worry about my hang-ups, Tom. yeah, no, the talent is the phrase that's used industry-wide these days, I guess. The people are out there, but, you know, the relationship between employer and employee has changed and continues to evolve. I do find myself in lots of scenarios where there appears to be an element of frustration around, I hate to use the phrase, but the younger people coming into work and you know, what their expectations of work are. And I think, you know, we just need to recognise that their development processes, their how they were brought up, how they interact with people, how they use technology is so fundamentally different to people of my age. And as you can see, no one else can, thankfully, Tom. I'm in my mid-50s. And we've kind of just got to reconcile ourselves with the fact that these people want something different from their employment relationship. If you fail to deliver on that, then you are going to fail to bring the best people into your organisation. But yeah, there are of course good people out there. We all see them in all walks of life all the time. Bringing them into your organisation is about having the right proposition for them. I think one of the things that manufacturing as a sector struggles with is the expectation around flexibility in the workplace that a lot of new people coming into work have. The concept of the employee value proposition being a holistic invitation to come and join your company rather than just a transactional relationship between work and pay is something that is hard for manufacturing companies to demonstrate true flexibility around. I mean, you can't work from home and come in when you like and operate the personal shift system that works for you. That's just not going to happen in manufacturing.
How are you supporting, how is Hunter Selection supporting their clients to, you know, attract the very best talent against such a backdrop of concern, you know, 70,000, almost 70,000 job vacancies currently sit in manufacturing, ongoing skills shortages, which every company that we speak to, you know, tell us about their concerns. So what are you guys doing to help at the moment?
I'm reluctant to say problems, but one of the shifts that we've seen in the industry is moving towards lots more talent acquisition models and RPO models and internal recruitment type models, which, dare I say, over time, I mean, will potentially, I think, dent the quality of people that businesses employ. There's nothing better than competitive supply of the best talent to your organisation. And I'm afraid a lot of these models actually take away that competitive element of a number of suppliers even looking for the best people for you, and it becomes kind of a contractual obligation to provide people. I worry that over time the models end up with a number of companies recruiting people that are good enough rather than the best people for their organizations. So that's perhaps somewhat philosophical point about how you go about the process of recruitment. But we still try and ensure that our model is structured so that all of our consultants are driven to do the absolute best they can for their clients in terms of finding the best candidate and never, ever be focused on finding people that are good enough. So that's one thing. The other thing is a key one is trying to help our customers understand a little bit more about how they can perhaps recruit with sustainability in mind, certainly diversity and inclusion. We have specialists within the company that are D&I recruitment specialists, and working with clients to look at that. I mean, it's still less than a third of manufacturing employees are women, which is crazy, yeah. Clearly. Just trying to, and these are usually smaller organisations, but we're just trying to add a little bit more value to the process in terms of getting them to broaden the potential pool of people that they look at, and maybe even specifically and actively look to recruit in certain sectors where they can create long-term competitive advantage if they can be really good at doing it.
Well, look, keep up the good work, Russ, and thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
No, absolute pleasure, Tom. Really nice to be involved today.
That is the first People and Skills episode down then, pretty much, chaps. I actually I didn't factor in a made by a moron section today, just because of the amount of content we've got. I don't know if anyone had anything kind of top of mind.
Not in that respect,
I don't this week, no.
I haven't got a made by a moron this week because my lovely wife Jacqueline hasn't bought any tat for the kitchen recently, but I'm sure she will over the coming week, so I will be back next week with a made by a moron. Gawangtanga.
it's an at least kind of, yeah, bi-weekly occurrence, isn't it?
It is in my house, yeah. I mean, literally, yeah.
Back next week, listener, tune in for that. Molly will be back in the presenter chair with us, and you boys, well, go off and enjoy the rest of your day off. I've got loads of work to do.
I'm going to drink some gin and play Red Dead Redemption 2 on the PlayStation.
I'm going to play some golf and watch some golf.
See you, boys.
Enjoy your weekends.
Take care, chaps.